This is a Hipsters of the Coast podcast. This Doom Travelers podcast is brought to you by Hipsters of the Coast, your destination for magic news, strategy, and entertainment. And by Cast Haven, where you can build your magic collection like a pro. Visit casthaven.com for more information.
All right, so welcome to another episode of Doom Travelers, where we talk about magic and play Destiny. I'm joined this week by Matt the Obliterator Jones and Dave McNasty McCoy. We're going to be talking about Siege Rhino, everyone's favorite, perfectly fairly costed creature, up there with other perfectly fairly costed creatures like Tarmogoyf. And I believe Dave is going to go through some questions and answers and some examples, and we're going to put on our developer hats and talk about just what is going on with Wizards and how something like Siege Rhino actually came to be. So I'm going to let Dave take over here. And yeah.
All right, well, let's get to over it and get in the Crucible playlist real quick. But anyway, so this episode is based on Siege Rhino. And the reason why I wanted to talk about Siege Rhino is because it is clearly one of the most impactful cards in Standard. It's powerful and flexible enough to be played as a 4-of in both the Abzan aggro decks and the Abzan control decks, which is insane to me. Just like two decks with two different game plans want to play this as a 4-of. And it's also made an appearance in Modern, where it was played in some of the Abzan mid-range decks at the recent Modern Pro Tour. And people often talk about Siege Rhino like it's unfair, or at least far more powerful than any of the other options at 4 mana. And I really wanted to delve in and examine why Siege Rhino is costed the way it is, and whether or not it is undercosted. So we should really begin with a discussion about casting costs, with how R&D determines the casting cost of a spell. So this particular spell, Siege Rhino, of course, is a 4/5 trampler that costs one colorless, one green, one white, and one black mana. So colorless, white, green, black. And it has an enter the battlefield ability of draining your opponent for 3 life. So they lose 3 life and you gain 3 life. And this is a kind of design that Mark Rosewater, the head designer for Magic, has termed cut and paste design. It's where you have a gold card, a card that can be cast with multiple different colors, and you take an ability that each individual color can do, and you copy and paste it onto one card. So for Siege Rhino, it's the green body, the white gain life, and the black lose life ability. And so if we're going to talk about casting, or properly costing this kind of spell, we should really look at what Wizards has done before. And a good example of this is the evolution of Counterspell. And Counterspell, of course, is the alpha Counterspell, which is blue for counter target spell. And but they have a bunch of,
because that was fairly costed.
Oh
right?
Yeah, because that was fairly costed. Yeah, right? I mean, but of course, it became cancel later on, which was colorless in a blue. What I was going for is they established a cost for counterspell at blue. And then when they decided to make variations of the card, that's where we can see how they've decided to cost these additional abilities for a card. So for example, there's a card in Invasion, so in 2000, that is a counter target spell, and you gain 3 life. And that spell, of course, costs blue, white. So the blue for the counter spell part, and the white for the gain life part. So Rich, if I was going to, say, create another variation on that spell, in which instead of gaining life, our opponent would lose life. So it'd be a counter target spell and target, and that opponent loses 3 life. What do you think we would cost that spell at?
probably blue, blue, black.
Yeah,
Or blue, blue, red, maybe, but...
Well, yeah, I guess loss of life is black. The damage would,
oh, so yeah, so it's loss of life, so red. Then blue, 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 black.
Blue, blue, black, yeah. And in the same set, of course, there was Undermine, which was a blue, blue, and a black for a counter-target spell, and that spell's controller loses 3 life.
And they eventually put those two together also, right?
Yeah, so the next step, of course, is what happens when you counter a target spell, you gain 3 life, and your opponent loses 3 life. And that spell is Punish Ignorance from Shards of Alara in 2008. So based on the two previous examples, Undermine and Absorb, they came up with the copy-paste cost of blue, blue, white, black for a counter target spell. And gain 3 life, and your opponent loses 3 life. So what R&D has showed us there is that you can basically just take the cost of a spell and a cost of another ability and paste them together to make a card. They took Counterspell, which is blue-blue. They took Lose 3 Life, which is a single black, which is Bump in the Night, it's a single black, and made it into Undermine, which was blue-blue-black. So it's a pretty simple way of costing a card, really, and so what that does is that's a good lead in to Siege Rhino, because Siege Rhino is designed in a very similar way. You have your creature, your green creature with a very green body of a 4/5 trampler for 4.
Right.
Only green can have that because green gets the best creatures, and then you have the white ability of gaining life, and you have the black ability of losing life. And so if we're going to analyze or examine what Siege Rhino should cost, if we're going to start the development of Siege Rhino all over again, we would have to take a look at each of those abilities individually and see what they should cost. So the first part of this would be looking at its body. Siege Rhino is a 4/5 for 4 mana with trample. And so Rich, if you were going to cost just a green creature that cost 4 mana and give it trample, what do you think a fair power and toughness for that kind of
card? A fair casting cost?
Well, the casting cost is going to be 4. We're going to stick with a casting cost of 4 mana.
Power toughness for a green creature with trample at 4 mana. I feel like you could probably get away with a 5/5. I would start with a 5/5 for 4 mana. If it was just vanilla green
and give it trample for a 5/5 with trample.
No way. Sure. Four. I say 4.
Four. You think 4/4? I mean, I'm just thinking of creatures like I don't know. I feel like we've come a long way in the realm of. I mean, a 5/5 for 4 mana in other colors like black usually comes with a drawback, right? Like Plague Sliver or Juzam Jinn. But I feel like green is the color of 5/5 creatures for 4 mana.
I mean, you're definitely.
It would have to be a rare, right? Because that's just it's too good to have at a common or uncommon. But I think you could, if you were going to make it a rare, I think you could probably get away with a 5/5.
Yeah, so what you're talking about is the conceit of my question. Is there's a lot more to development than just casting cost and power and toughness. You have to take into consideration a rarity and how often it's going to be seen in a booster pack when you're costing a card. And so it's not quite fair for me to ask the question as I did, because there are other considerations when you determine a card's true cost. But if we look back in Magic's history for other 4 mana, 4 CMC green creatures with trample, there are some surprisingly close examples and pretty consistent examples in the history of Magic. So if you go all the way back to Alpha, you get the old classic War Mammoth for 3 and a green, which is a 3/3 trampler. That was, of course, a common, so it's not pushed. It was a card intended to be seen a lot, and generally fair at that cost. And then later on, when you come to, say, Mirrodin Besieged in 2011, you run across a very similar creature called Tangle Mantis, which cost 2 and green-green, so 4 mana for a 3/4 with Trample. So with the additional green mana, you get an additional toughness, point of toughness, and you still retain the Trample. So that's a pretty consistent design baseline at Common over the years of Magic. You can get a 3/3 green creature with Trample for four mana, or if you add another green mana symbol to the cost, make it harder to cast with that extra green symbol, you can get an extra point of toughness. And then if you make it even harder to cast with three green mana, so green, 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 you could get yourself a 4/5 creature, but it doesn't have trample. So what we're seeing here is we're seeing green's ability to get very large creatures at very cheap mana costs, but the trade-off is more mana intensity, more green mana intensity. So you can get a 3 mana 4/5, but you have to pay 3 green mana for it. Whereas you can get a 3/3 trampler for 4 mana, but you only have to pay one green mana. So what we see here is at Common, we can get a 3/4 with trample at 4 mana for 2 green green, which is pretty reasonable. And as you said before, Rich, you can push rares a little harder. You can cost them more aggressively because they're not going to be seen in the pack quite as frequently.
So, right, and you're not going to see them across the table quite as frequently.
Exactly. So if we're going to make this a rare and we're going to push it a little more, given the baseline of a 2 green-green casting cost for a 3/4, what do you think you would cost a 4/5 trampler at rare? Do you think 2 green green is a reasonable approximation for a 4/5 trampler at rare?
I think you could certainly get away with that. I think you could also get away with triple green. I think if you were going to go up to 2 green and 3 colorless, so if we were going to say what would you make a 5 mana trampler? I think it would have to be a 5/5 for 5 mana. So I think a 4/5 for 4 mana is perfectly reasonable.
I think that's a very reasonable place to start. I think a 4/5 trampler for 2 colorless, 2 green is a very reasonable place to start.
It's a pretty boring rare.
It is a pretty boring rare. Of course, we had Deadbridge Goliath back in Return to Ravnica, which was a 5/5 for 2 colorless and 2 green. And it was just a vanilla 5/5 except for the scavenge ability. So you
did not it didn't trample?
It did not have trample. It was just a vanilla 5/5. So yeah, I think we're in agreement that 2 green green for a 4/5 trampler at rares is a pretty reasonable cost. I don't think anybody would be up in arms if they saw somebody cast that on the other side of the table. They'd be like, oh, that's a good creature. But nobody would be like, oh my god, that is just unbeatable. So we agree at 2 green green, but now we need to analyze the two other abilities, the gain life and the drain life ability.
Well, I actually want to, the last point you touched on, sorry, about it being a 2 green, 2 colorless, 4/5 trampler, I think it would be pretty powerful. It's not splashy, but in mono green, as opposed to some kind of multicolor combination, but in a mono green deck where you have access to so much acceleration through things, effects like Llanowar Elves and similar effects, I feel like you could easily get that out on turn 3. And I would be concerned about that not being, I mean, it would have to be rare, is what I'm saying. You couldn't get away with that being an uncommon.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, the trample is a pretty undervalued limited mechanic, or at least maybe undervalued isn't the right word, but hard to gauge how important it is in value, not immediately obvious, because blocking is such an important feature of a limited game of Magic, and trample makes blocking much less effective.
And I feel like there's an important distinction here, because our 4/5 for 4 mana green creature who's just 2 green and 2 colorless, I think it's perfectly valid, playable in limited. But like Matt said, it's boring and it's a garbage rare for the purposes of constructed play.
Agreed. Yeah, no, it's definitely a boring card. I'm not sure even what the Timmies. Timmies are the green creature guys, right? Or are those Johnnies? Those are Timmies, right?
Timmy, for sure.
Yeah, I'm not even sure Timmy would enjoy that. Yeah. 4/5 trampler for 4 mana. But the way you make a card like that more exciting, of course, is you add more awesome effects.
Right.
So let's take a look at the gain life, half of drain life first, because conveniently we have another card that we can look at as an example of how R&D would cost a big creature that gains life when it enters the battlefield. And that card, of course, is Loxodon Hierarch from the original Ravnica. Loxodon Hierarch costs 2 white and a green, so 4 mana for a 4/4. And when it entered the battlefield, you gain 4 life. And it had the additional ability where you could pay green, white, and sacrifice Loxodon Hierarch to regenerate each creature you control. So what we see here with Loxodon Hierarch is for 4 mana with 1 white and 1 green, you can get a 4/4, a big green body, with the enter the battlefield effect of gaining 4 life, which is the white half of the mana cost. So if we're going to apply this to Siege Rhino, we currently have...
So basically you're taking Loxodon Hierarch and giving it trample of sorts.
Exactly. So what we're going to have to do to Loxodon Hierarch is something very similar to what we had to do for Tangle Mantis to give it that extra point of toughness and trample. And that was convert one of the colorless mana symbols into a green mana symbol. So what we would end up with is 1 colorless, 2 green, and a white for a 4/5 trampler that gains 3 life when it enters the battlefield. And, of course, the final part of our Siege Rhino puzzle is to add the lose 3 life part of the card, which black has the ability to do for a single black mana. So if we were to copy and paste that ability onto our new Siege Rhino, we would end up with 1 colorless, 2 green, a white, and a black for a 4/5 trampler that drains 3 life.
So now we have an overcosted Siege Rhino. Where we end up with Siege Rhino, right, is going to be black, white, green, and a colorless. And, you know, I think the what's missing for me in that casting cost, you know, I don't think there's a problem with it costing 4 mana, right? I think the concern is that the card only costs 1 green.
I mean, I think as a result of our conversation, I agree that one of the main concerns is its lack of a second green mana source or a mana symbol. I'm not sure I agree about it costing 4. But for sure, I think the biggest part is it's missing its second green mana symbol. I think the difference between a green, white, black for Siege Rhino versus a 1 green, white, black Siege Rhino, I think that difference is much smaller than the difference between a colorless white, black, green Siege Rhino and a green, white, black, green Siege Rhino.
Hmm.
I think those two comparisons, I think that there's a much bigger difference between the version without a second green and a version with the second green, as opposed to the extra colorless mana. Because you're just getting too much of a green card, right? I mean, the second green mana symbol is what lets you get this immensely powerful body. You lose sight of the green side of the card if you reduce that second green mana symbol. And I think that's absolutely one of the most necessary parts of recasting Siege Rhino.
Right, because I feel like I feel like they did cut and paste this guy together, like you said earlier. But I don't think they started the way that we just did. I don't think they said, "What do we have if we?" You know, they didn't take a base French vanilla green creature and add things to it. I think they just took all the abilities, trample, drain life, gain life, and a big body, and they thought to themselves, okay, this creature is green, black, and white. Let's make it green, black, and white and cost it aggressively. And then they got what they got. Because if they had started from the way we just did, then I think, you know, you go down, you have to start from a position of costing it with double green. Just like how Counterspell has to have double blue in it. And the sort of effects that, you know, like Wrath, like Anger of the Gods would be an effect that has double red. I think there's just some effects that are iconically so red deep within a color that they require two mana of that color, like Wrath of God effects. And, you know, you see with Wrath of God and something like Supreme Verdict, right? Cost a white, a blue, colorless. If that card costs two white, a blue, and colorless, then it has to be in a deck that's much more white focused. And a card like Siege Rhino, if it's in a deck that if it costs double green, then you need to commit much more to green in order to play it. And I think it doesn't see nearly as much play then in Constructed as it does today. So I think I wonder if maybe they at some point did have it cost double green or had it costing five mana or even had it as a 5/5 and then decided they wanted it to be Constructed playable.
I mean, I think I disagree with your assertion that R&D didn't start with double green in its mana cost. I think you have to start with double green in its mana cost in order for it to cost four mana. One of the things we haven't talked about in terms of a cost, how R&D thinks about costing, is the environment that you're playing the card in. Like, the power level of a card is determined by the other cards around it, the environment that it's being played in. And I think R&D looked around at the other wedge cards that they made for Khans of Tarkir and saw that none of those gold cards had a double color in it. Like, for example, Butcher of the Horde, the Mardu version of Siege Rhino, is one black, white, red for a 5/4 flyer that you can sack to do a bunch of things.
Right.
And none of those cards in that cycle have a double color in it. So guess is they probably had Siege Rhino at double green in their initial sketch of it, but saw that none of the other wedge cards had a double color in it. And Obzon's main color isn't even green. So like that was an even bigger environmental reason for it not to have double green in it, right? Obzon is centered in white and has green as its allied color. But it's the white-centered clan in Khans of Tarkir. And so it's even less of an environmental reason to have that double green mana symbol. So I think the lack of a second green mana symbol isn't because R&D didn't think it should be there. I think it's an environmental reason.
So you think it's an intentional way to push the cycle aesthetically?
Yeah, I think Mark Rosewater's consistently said that aesthetics are a big part of design, and people notice when things aren't aesthetically aligned, like Grizzlebrand right. costing eight, but everything being sevens on the card.
Right.
and so I think they very intentionally dropped that second green mana symbol. So it probably cost green, green, black, white as a very pushed Obzon card.
Do you think they intended for it to warp the format, though?
I mean, I don't. I can't answer that. I think they knew it was going to be a very powerful card. But I think the difference between the one colorless mana and the second green mana is big enough that you can play it in any kind of Obzon deck. Which is why you see it in the control and the aggro decks.
Are any of the other three color gold cards ETB effects, or are they all not?
That is a good question. Off the top of
the battlefield is the biggest part.
Some of them are ETB, right? Because Sidisi,
Mills.
Does it Sidisi Mills when she enters and whenever? What I forget what the second trigger is. When a creature dies,
she attacks when she attacks.
Oh, she attacks, right?
Yeah. So Sidisi is the Sultai version. Butcher of the Horde is the Mardu version. Does not have an enter the battlefield effect.
Yeah,
and so I was thinking when you brought up Butcher, like Butcher is a much less devastating card because you have to do. There's so much more you can lose in that situation. Like, if you sack a guy, first off, he gets cast. It's fine. Sure, he makes it through a counterspell. Then you have to sacrifice a dude to make him have haste. You have to sacrifice a dude to do anything. And then if they remove it, they're two for wanting you. So there's all of these, like, downsides. But if you cast Siege Rhino for four mana, and it resolves, you're automatically draining three life.
Right.
And
so
then
it's
when
it's
you bring back
swing.
Siege Rhino, it happens again. You know.
So it's a 6-point swing when it lands on the board, and even if your opponent removes it immediately, it's a 1-for-1 and a 6-point swing. So it would be like the, you know, if you had a card that said your opponent loses 3 life, you gain 3 life, and they discard a card. And that would be a black and white spell. Mm-hmm. Do you think that would be 4 mana? That would probably be 3 mana.
Yeah,
probably. 2 black and a white. Or black and white colorless, and that wouldn't even be rare.
Yeah, I think Jones, your point about the enter the battlefield ability being the strongest part of Siege Rhino is spot on. When you look at the other, so to complete the cycle, we have Siege Rhino as Obzon, Sidisi as Sultai.
Wait, is Sidisi not the clan leader?
Oh, that's a good point. So we got that completely backwards.
So it's the vizier.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a total piece of shit.
You're right, but I mean, Sidisi's power is its enter the battlefield. It is partially its enter the battlefield. But if you look at Siege Rhino and Manus Rider are the two most powerful or most played of that cycle.
And then Knuckleblade, right? Probably.
And
after
Knuckleblade.
That.
And part of the reason those two and the potential third are the most played is because they can do something right away. The Rider can attack right away. Or at least try to attack right away. And Knuckleblade can be paid with an extra red to give it haste to attack right away. Or you can save it and pump it. It has a lot more value than just being a 4-4, big dumb 4-4. So I think you're spot on about why Siege Rhino is so powerful. It's because you get something for the 4 mana no matter what. Yeah, and I think that's absolutely right.
And you get it every time. So in a format that has reanimation spells and ways to get your bros back, it just keeps happening.
Yeah, but if it costs 2 green, a black and a white, it would require a much higher dedication to green. You couldn't play a white-black splash-green deck and play Siege Rhino.
Yeah, it would be very difficult to open with a Thoughtseize, then play a Fleecemane Lion, and then play a, you know, go from there to get to Siege Rhino. But that said, that the deck certainly has a lot of help with Cursor of Kruphix. I do wonder how effective Siege Rhino is going to be once Theros rotates out and it loses access to Cursor. But no, it's a very powerful card. Wizards clearly pushed it for one reason or another. And I think it's pretty, you know, I think we've established how it happened. It'll be interesting to see if they feel that this is something they're going to continue to do on occasion. I think it's fine. I think I don't think the formats are warped so horribly because of Siege Rhino that it's something that they need to do something about. But they certainly need to be more careful doing things like this in the future, mostly because it prevents them from creating cards like Birthing Pod and Green Sun Zenith and all of, cards like that, which interact very nicely with an effect like Siege Rhino or Thragtusk. But
speaking of another card that needed another green mana symbol in it.
Oh, yeah. That's maybe Wizards is just really trying to push green after years and years of green kind of sitting by the wayside.
As they should. It's the best color.
Yeah.
Thank you, Timmy.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
But, all right. I think that's good. Good job, guys. We figured out Seadrina.
Yes. Problem solved.
Well, thanks everyone for listening, and I hope you found this very educational. And the next time Wizards makes a card as powerful and seemingly pushed as Seadrina, we'll be sure to break it down again. Thanks, Dave, for putting together all the research to go into this one, and look forward to doing it again.
Sweet. How, Rich, how do I turn this thing off?
Hey, Guardians. Thanks for tuning in to the Doom Travelers podcast. You can find more at doomtravelers.com or follow at Doom Travelers on Twitter for show updates and other nonsense. Make sure to subscribe to Hipsters TV on YouTube for videos of our previous episodes. And don't forget that you can find audio-only versions of the Doom Travelers podcast on iTunes. For my co-hosts Rich Stein and Matt the Obliterator Jones, I'm David Bones McCoy. See you next time.